reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome on this latest edition of Climbing the Grid. The Barber Winterfest for 2015 just went underway. I'm your host, Joey Barnes. Joined with me, as always, is Christopher DeHardy. Chris, how are you tonight?
I'm very well. I'm off tomorrow, so naturally I'm going to be enjoying tonight at home. How are you doing, Joey?
Doing all right, man. Been a busy day in racing. Been a busy, busy last 7 days. This weather kind of start up a little bit of things and postpone quite a bit of things. Fittingly enough, the title for this is Winterfest. Just given what we've faced with the Mazda Road to Indy Series, Pro Mazda Championship, and USF 2000, I'd say it's very fitting. So, without further ado, Chris, go ahead and carry us into what kind of transpired with the Mazda Road to Indy down in Barber.
Well, first and foremost, the Indy Lights testing was actually postponed because of the cold weather there. They actually postponed Indy Lights testing to the next, I think it's actually tomorrow it's when it starts.
You'd be right.
Winterfest, yep. So what happened with Winterfest was, let me get the, all right, trying to get the link URL up here. So let's start off at the bottom and work our way up. First of all, USF 2000 really was an unexpected championship winner, in my opinion. I'm not sure how many of y'all were had Nico Jamin penciled in to win the title, but he was not actually my pick to win the Winterfest Championship. I was thinking it was going to be Jake Eidson or possibly Aaron Tielet. But Nico Jamin, he had very good consistency over at Barber at the Winterfest overall. At the second race at Barber, which actually had double points for USF and for Pro Mazda, he ended up winning the race. But let's start at the beginning at Barber Motorsports Park. There were two races at Barber. There wasn't three races because the race that was supposed to be held on the 25th was actually canceled due to the cold weather. It was so cold and so wet. It was actually pretty much unsafe to drive. So they decided, okay, two races, second race is double points. So the first race at Barber Motorsports Park, Victor Franzoni won for Afterburner Autosport, rebounding from his disqualification at Nolan Motorsports Park for a tech inspection mistake. Jake Edson was second. Nico Jamin was third. But the real story, Anthony Martin and Jordan Lloyd for John Comiskey Racing, they've been doing really well for that team. They've really done pretty well coming in from Australia, and they got fourth and sixth place there in the USF 2000 race. Aaron Tielitz actually finished last at this first race at Barber. It looks like he had contact on the very first lap of the race. Now, heading into race number two, Jake Edson actually had a mechanical issue, so unfortunately he didn't have any luck at all in the last race of the Winterfest Championship. Jordan Lloyd had a contact on the first lap as well, but Nico Jamin, his consistency staying up front paid dividends for him because he was able to stay ahead of Victor Franzoni, and he only won by a little over 2 seconds. Jamin's teammate finished fourth, and Anthony Martin from John Comiskey Racing was third. So the final points tally, it was only 5-point difference between Nico Jamin and Victor Franzoni, with only Jake Edson 3 points behind him. Anthony Martin was fourth with 110 points, and 2 points behind him was Aaron Tielitz. Joey, how did you think Nico Jamin was going to fare at Winterfest? Because he really wasn't on my radar as being, the top dog at Cape Motorsports.
Well, he ran really solid at NOLA. He performed great. I mean, he grabbed 22 points in race one at NOLA and 26 points in race two. Only 6 points in race three. And it, I mean, let's be honest here, though. I mean, the big story is, ironically enough, and we'll get into more of this on the Pro Mazda scale, but the disqualification on Franzoni is ultimately what did him in for Winterfest, because if he has those points, he wins this title. But I tell you what, you mentioned Aaron Tielis, and I think it's so telling how this championship is shaped up for Winterfest, and it gives us a nice preview. You almost feel like Anthony Martin is this year's Anthony Tielis, because last year Tielis was the hot shoe rookie, you know, performed wonderful last year, and ultimately looked like the early favorite to possibly win the USF 2000 championship here in 2015. But I really like what I'm seeing out of Anthony Martin. Go ahead, Chris.
I'll say, I'll tell you what, those two guys, Anthony Martin and Jordan Lloyd for John Comiskey Racing, those guys are actually very well spoken. So back in December of last year, there was a test over at NOLA Motorsports Park where John Comiskey Racing, Team Pelfrey, and Andretti Autosport were testing. They were very easy to talk to, very very well spoken, and they seemed, you know, they were pretty happy to be there. And clearly they did a good enough job where they were able to secure drives this year. I tell you what, John Comiskey Racing is looking very, very strong for their 2015 title aspiration with Anthony and Jordan behind the wheel. The reason why I asked about Nico Jermaine, honestly, before NOLA, I honestly didn't have him penciled in as a front runner. I had him as, you know, someone that would finish in the top five, but to me it didn't seem like it was going to be, you know, constant wins or, you know, constantly, you know, being top two or three, but and NOLA, he did a fantastic job. He would have done very well in the third race had he not had his collision with, I think it was Victor Franzoni in the third race. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it was Jake Edson in the third race. But either way, he did a fantastic job through and through. Baltimore Motorsports Park did very well. Scoring that win in the last race is what won him the championship, because the second race at Barber for USF and Pro Mods both were double points. So there was one race that you wanted to win. That was it.
Well, I think it's, you know, you mentioned John Comiskey Racing, and I think it's really telling with an organization like that. I mean, there was still a team championship to be won, and, you know, Cape Motorsports, the Blaine Taylor Racing, collected 158 total points through the Winterfest, and John Comiskey Racing ended up second, granted, by a huge margin. I mean, Cape Motorsports with Lane Taylor Racing is a significant force in the Indy, you know, series. And I think what's very interesting to me is, you know, there's some big names at Team Pelfrey and Pabst Racing and Afterburner Autosport. You know, they've got the one main guy there. Cape Motorsports with Lane Taylor Racing has built up, I mean, almost like how Schmidt built it up from Indy Lights is what you're kind of seeing with Cape Motorsports at the USF 2000 level. And, you know, it remains to be seen what's going to happen, obviously, for 2015. If anything that Winterfest gave us is a good indication of what's to come, it's that Comiskey is going to be strong, that Afterburner is going to be strong. But I'm wondering who has staying power. You know, I'm looking at this, and I tell you, a guy, there's a few guys on here that I really like, but somebody that we both overlooked who's just consistent is Nikita Lastochkin. And, you know, he's a rookie. You know, he's still trying to figure everything out on the USF 2000 level. I think come mid-season, he could be a threat to finish on the podium consistently. I don't view him as a championship threat type of driver, at least in year one. If he does, he'll shock me, much like Jamin shocked us all with Winterfest. But I very much feel like this is a four-horse race between Jamin, Franzoni, Eidson, and, you know, it's a toss-up there between Martin and Tielis. But, you know, I think ultimately going into Laguna Seca at the end of the year, we're probably going to have these four battling for it, if not just the two. But, you know, we'll see what happens. What do you think, Chris?
Lastochkin really doesn't strike me as someone who's going to be the big shocker. For me, the big shocker will more than likely be honestly how Martin and Lloyd from John Comiskey Racing do in the season. The reason why I say that is because John Comiskey Racing did not have a full season effort last year in USF 2000. They had only one car at two races, and that was at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and at Toronto. You know, they've been out of the series, you know, for a little bit of time here. I'm looking back at the 2013 championship, and they weren't even entered that year. 2012, I'm looking for them, and I don't see them at all on here as well either. They've been out of the championship for quite a while, so the fact that they're this competitive this soon really says a lot about how they are, or how the preparation is, and what kind of drivers they have. To me, they're going to be bigger surprises than Mostoshkin, probably from a historical perspective. Of course, let's face it, K Motorsports, having won the past past four USF 2000 championships, if they're dethroned, that'll be even bigger a bigger surprise. Because they have to deal with Franzoni, and they also have to deal with Jake Edson, assuming that Edson gets signed by Pabst Racing. Of course, I have every reason to believe that Pabst Racing would sign him, because he damn near won Winterfest for them. I mean, he was only 5 points short.
Yeah, and you know, and then obviously, I mean, this kid proved his worth. kind of came out of the block just swinging, and that's, you talked about Jamin being somebody that you didn't see. You know, for me, Edson just as well, somebody that I didn't expect him to just light it up at NOLA, you know, in race one. And, for me, I honestly think that Franzoni, I mean, I saw him enough last year. I mean, he's a wild, you know, he's a terrier when it comes to going through the pack. He's not afraid to start 10th. I mean, even starting 10th on the grid, this kid's still got a shot to win just because of his aggressive nature on starts. And, you know, which his starts, I know you and I watched some of the footage of that. And, I mean, his starts are just absolutely incredible. And his ability to, I guess, bonsai dive and get away with it. But
his car control was incredible at NOLA. Like, when there was a video of him going from 14th to 7th on a start, I think it was the first race of the weekend.
Yep.
He did a dynamite job going through the field in the first four corners there.
We overlooked two guys that, if we don't mention them, they might be a little pissed off. But, you know, Parker Thompson and Garth Rickards, how do we feel about those? Because those cats finished 6th and 7th in the championship ahead of Jordan Loy and Nikita, who we talked about earlier. And, you know, in their own right, were very consistent. They were between them and Talese in 5th. But nonetheless, these guys are rookies. And I'm not necessarily high on Rickards, but I think the kid's definitely got some flashes of brilliance.
Rickards only did one race last year at Toronto for the USF 2000 Championship, and that race weekend he was 16th in both races. But to be honest with you, running with I think he's running with Team Pelfrey this year. Pelfrey has good equipment; they have good preparation, so naturally they expect their drivers to do well. I honestly have a feeling that Rickards might steal a top five place in the championship if he can keep it consistent, you know, keep consistently on the track. Rickards, he's going to have a big hill to climb going up against Cape Motorsports, John Comiskey Racing, and after running with Victor Franzoni. But can he do it? Honestly, we'll see in St. Petersburg. That's going to be the first true test. I say a true test because this is when the actual championship starts, not Winterfest.
Let me ask you something here, Chris. You know, there's 9 teams in this Winterfest championship, and you know, the championship itself could be slightly skewed when it comes to the entries here. And you had mentioned you know, Pelfrey and Afterburner. I don't know off the top of my head how many cars are being fielded by, you know, various teams. So just kind of a brief rundown as we're getting ready for St. Pete here at the end of the month. You know, are we looking Cape Motorsports with Wayne Taylor Racing? If I remember right, they have 3 entries. Is that correct?
I'm seeing 2 for Winterfest. I'm not seeing a third one after that. Although let's take a look here. No, they only have two cars right now confirmed. Swan Motorsports, I think, still has yet to confirm their number from Max Mullinen. They didn't have, let's see. Right now, they don't have a third car. I don't think they have a third car for Cape Motors for their championship run this coming year. I think they only have Jamin and Tulitz, but I'm still looking into it right now. So let's see.
I think Afterburner's only running with Franzoni. They don't have a second car.
Yeah.
That might be completely
Let me see. Yeah, Afterburner only is running Franzoni. Pelfrey's got four cars. John Kaminsky's got two. Pabst still hasn't signed Edson for the season, although I think they will, given his run up here. Let me see.
Did you say Pelfrey has four?
Yeah, Pelfrey has four cars.
And they still
Ayla Agron, who won the F1600 championship last year, Luke Gabin, Garth Rickards, and Nikita Lastoshkin.
Four entries, and they still finished fifth in the team championship. That's rough.
Yeah, well, it shows the kind of preparation that has to go into these cars to make them go quick, because Cape Motorsports and John Kaminsky and Afterburner, those and Pabst, they all won races or came very close to winning races. Kaminsky didn't win a race, but still having a car finish second and third in the third race in NOLA helped him get a lot of points for the championship there for the team title. That being said, no, I'm not seeing any other drivers for Cape Motorsports, so it's only going to be those two for the time being.
Moving on to the Pro Mazda Championship, that itself was something that was unpredictable. I know that you and I had kind of looked at Florin LaTorre or even Garrett Grist as drivers to watch. Weiron Tan is somebody that you had pegged after you had watched him down there at NOLA during testing. Jack Aitken, to me, kind of came out of nowhere, and as well as Dalton Kellett. And for me, Weiron Tan, only because I don't know a whole lot about his background, and and I expected more out of Grist and LaTorre, but this championship in its own right was pretty phenomenal.
It was. First of all, you mentioned LaTorre. He actually got a podium at the first race at Barber for Pro Mazda. But Jack Aitken, the really sad thing about Aitken is he's not running this championship full bore this year. He's going to be racing over in Europe, and I think World Series by Renault, I think. He might run a couple of Pro Mazda races during the year, but Europe is his main focus. That being said, Tan, he drove in German F3 last year. I think he got like two or three race wins. He did the test over at NOLA last year, and the guys in Andretti like him. He's got a hell of a foot underneath going on those pedals right there, because he kept on Jack Aitken during the races at NOLA that Aitken won, but ultimately what killed him was the third race at NOLA. So he apparently didn't agree with Aitken's driving style and was actually in heated discussion with the officials after the race. He refused to go to the podium and actually was penalized 5 points for bad sportsmanship. He lost the Winterfest Championship by 1 point. That ended up being the thing that cost him, because there were only two people on the podium there. It was Aitken, and I think it was Alessandro Latif at the third race at NOLA. But Tan did, despite the penalty, Tan did everything he could possibly try and do, except for winning the first race at Barber to win the championship. So the first race at Barber, Aitken won over Tan by, three-quarters of a second. LaTorre was only a couple of seconds behind them. The top five was filled out by Raul Owens and Dalton Kellett. Yigos then took the top three, the next three spots with 6th, 7th, and 8th, with Gure, Grist, and Gutierrez. The main surprise there was the other Yigos car, Raul Owens, was second to last. He probably had either contact or a mechanical failure of some kind. But heading into the second race at Barber, Tan ended up, Tan ended up actually starting second with Aitken right behind him. LaTorre was third while Owen was on the pole. but it ended up being Tan winning over Aiken by just over 1.3 seconds. Kellett was third for Andretti Autosports, so it was a 1-3 for them. Then Tristan DeGrand was a big surprise for M1 Racing, scoring a fourth place there over Gary Christ in fifth. Latour only ended up getting sixth place in the last race, but overall, what happened, the other thing that happened that helped out Jack Aitken was he had the fastest lap of the race in the second race, which got him the bonus points that got him over Tan as well. It's a shame that Tan let his emotions get the best of him after the third race at NOLA, but unfortunately, that's the way that things go, I guess. Your thoughts,
well,
Joey?
You know, I don't think he'll make the same mistake during the regular season. And if you're going to make a mistake like that, I mean, you would rather do it during Winterfest than have it impact your season-long championship. You know, I'm looking down this running order. And, you know, first off, for all of our listeners out there, on the team championship side of things, Andretti Autosport grabbed the team championship with 177 total points over Team Pelfrey, who had 132. Juncos Racing had 114, and followed by M1. Cape Motorsports, Wayne Taylor Racing, ended up fifth. You know, I am incredibly astonished, and I don't necessarily think this is a negative, like whenever I say the fall of Juncos Racing and Pro Mazda, I don't necessarily mean it as a bad thing, because we all know that their focus is to develop their talent in Pro Mazda, but they're really looking at bigger, greener pastures when it comes to Indy Lights and their program with Spencer Pigot and Kyle Kaiser and company. And, you know, they got Jose Gutierrez in here. I actually expected a little bit more out of Gutierrez. I didn't expect eighth during Winterfest. Just because he's more seasoned, because it's on a team that he kind of got out of the shadows of Kaiser and Pigot. And I really expected more out of Jose Gutierrez, who only amounted an eighth-place finish in the overall standings. And, you know, say what you will, I mean, here's his finish. I mean, 6 points, 13 points, 17, 13, 28. Of course, the last race was double points, so there's 14 right there. He was consistently a middle-of-the-pack racer. There was no up-and-down, you know, scenario with him. You know... I don't know, who else do they have over there at Juncos? I know they signed somebody else.
It's Gary Christ, Will Owen, Gutierrez, and Bure, Timothy Bure. So they have four cars.
He just finished ahead of the rookie of the group, or I'm sorry, the rookie Timothy Bure, the other rookies, Will Owen. Christ and Owen finished next to each other, fifth and sixth in the championship standings for Winterfest as well. You know, and there's the other credit. I expected more out of Christ just because we saw that the flash of brilliance at Andretti Autosport last year when he was teamed with Shelby Blackstock in Pro Mazda. And, you know, he's kind of the enigma player to me, because I have a feeling that if he can – there's a way to put this without sounding incredibly mean. But, you know, if he could, I guess, have more focus onto the team and on his racing and less – on some of the excuses that have happened, because I know that he has a tendency to put the blame on everywhere else except his own shoulders. I feel like maturity, that if he can mature and season up and put more into the team, that, you know, blinders, tunnel vision, that he has a chance to be one of those guys that's just absolutely lights out, you know, like what we saw out of Brabham a couple years ago, Matthew Brabham, when he was at Andretti Autosport and ended up winning 13 races. I don't expect Christ to win 13 races in a season. That's just ridiculous, and nobody thought that out of Brabham. But I think that Christ has got all the makings of being a championship contender who can go out there and get you 5 or 6 wins. Obviously, they go to Lucas Oil Raceway. You know, it's where he sat on pole, led a ton of laps, maybe every lap, I'm not sure, and then ended up winning the race. You know, obviously those play to his strengths. But he finished behind the USF 2000 champion from last year, Florian Latorre, in the championship. So out of all of this, I would probably have to say, I mean, you got Aiken, Tan, Kellett, Latorre, and Grist. Really, I'm wondering Where the hell did Dalton Keller come from?
Well, first of all, to Griff's credit, he finished highest of all the Unicos cars, and Unicos won the title last year with Spencer Pigot. Then again, Will Owen had absolute goose eggs in Barber. He finished last in both races. Granted, one of them was because of contact. In fact, when one of them, I'm not sure if he had mechanical issues or whatever in the first race, but Grist had the issue at NOLA with the second race where he had contact. To Grist's credit, I mean, he did finish fifth. He did finish above all the other Unicos cars, but I mean, we'll see what happens over at St. Petersburg. Of course, I expected more out of Latour, but honestly, I don't think any of us were expecting Jack Aitken and Wear and Tan to have the kind of battle that they had, because I'm looking at the points deficits right now. Jack Aitken won the title with 167 points. Wear and Tan was 166. Dalton Kellett, 98. It was either Aitken or Tan for the title, and everybody else was just fighting for scraps for points. It was almost like Prost and Senna in 1988. I mean, no one else was going to, you know, get close to them.
And you had mentioned
the only negative. The only negative for Aitken was at the second race at NOLA, he got passed under yellow by three or four cars there, under the right when the caution was being thrown out. So if that wouldn't have happened, Aitken would have won this thing going away easy.
Well, and you had mentioned that Aitken is more than likely not going to run the full season in 2015 in Pro Mazda. So
no, he's focused over Europe.
Yeah, he'll be over in Europe. That leads me to Wear and Tan. And for our common listeners, what's some of his background? I know he's a guy that came over, I believe it's from the Philippines, and strong international racing with his background.
Well, he competed in German F3 last year. He competed in Malaysia in 2009, 2010, and 2011. Went over to Formula Renault in the UK in 2013. He was second place in that championship. In German Formula 3, I actually have all of the results right here, actually. Tan ended up finishing fifth in the championship. He had two wins at Hockenheim. He had a couple of podiums in the later part of the season. his team, he said they had some difficulty setting up the cars. I mean, he has a string here where 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 races out of 6, he finished in 4th place. He strikes me as one of those guys that, you know, once things were going, he said the team figured out how to set the car up, and they were just off in a rocket. Unfortunately, he retired from the second race in Hockenheim out of 3, but he won the other two races. So he looks like someone that if, you know, he has the car underneath him, he can, you know, do a good job with it. I'm wondering if he can keep this form up all season long, because we all saw what happened with R.C. Enerson last year. He had a rough patch in the middle of the season, and ultimately it didn't help him out too much.
We're looking at this. I'm looking at the championship standings right now, and I'm just trying to get a mind for what's going to happen once everybody unloads at St. Pete here in a few weeks. And, you know, I've got to say, I didn't know what to expect of Juncos bringing on Will Owen whenever they first grabbed him. But I got to be honest with you. I think I feel safer with him than I do Grist. And I know I'm being very critical of Grist. Grist is a talent, he's one of the talents that, honestly, I can say it's rare. He's lightning quick. But, you know, I'm looking at Will Owen. He outran Grist the first two races at NOLA. And between the two of them, he had the higher finish, the highest finish between them. And I think this is very interesting. I mean, you had mentioned the goose egg that got laid there at Barber that Will Owen dropped. But I don't know. I'm looking at this, and I kind of have a feeling that this is going to be a Wear and Tan, Florian Latore, Will Owen championship. If I'm a betting man looking at next year, I got to think this is probably going to be a three-way title fight come the end of the season.
Well, to be honest with you, Will Owen his big claim to fame, of course, was last year winning at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course, making his time up while everybody else was on wet tires. He was on the dry tires as the track was drying out. Honestly, Will Owen, to me, he's the kind of guy that I think he can do a good job if his mind is focused on it 100%, but if something goes wrong, I mean, it might discourage him a little bit. I think he's only 19 years old, and he's already up in Pro Monaco, so he does have time to grow as a driver. But I think if he can win maybe one or two races, it might give him a springboard to go after the championship pretty hard here. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more on that. You know, I'm really interested to see. I mean, gosh, could you imagine? Florian Latore has a chance to do something we haven't seen in a little bit. He has a chance to go from a USF 2000 to Pro Mazda champion in back-to-back years. And thanks for getting on to me there. And Latour, not Latore. My apologies, Florian. And, you know, I think it's exciting. I mean, me personally, I came into this watching Brabham do some good things, progressing up the ladder. And I would really love to see another talent do that again. I think it's always exciting because you've never – we still – I mean, Brabham won USF 2000 and Pro Mazda, but, he kind of fizzled out and had some issues. The luck ran out, so to speak, when he hit Indy Lights last year. I would really love to see somebody go ahead and pull the triple that we haven't seen yet and win all three series and get a scholarship over for IndyCar in what would be, I guess, for him, 2017. So, yeah. That's the biggest thing I'm looking at. I think that Latour is going to jump out quick. I expect him to be quick. I think that it was just simply, I mean, he goes from, regardless of how similar these cars might be, they have their dynamic differences in engineering. And I think that Winterfest was just merely a kind of a testing deal for Florian, and I expect him to really show up. And this could be a battle between him and Tan. You've convinced me, we're in Tan, that you are a title threat. It's not even the fact that he's up there battling for it. It's just how he was battling for it. Like you said, him and Aitken were head and shoulders above everybody. But, once they unload, well, they still give points to second place, and all it takes is a couple of errors for the leader. So, and if that's Tan, then so be it. But moving on, before we move on, give me some of your takes as far as what you expect out of Pro Mazda for next year or this upcoming season.
I'll say this year. I'm expecting it to be a three-way fight between Andretti, Cape, and Yunkos. I think Tan, I'm going to predict Tan will be the championship winner, although I do think it will be a hard fight between Tan and Latour and one of the Yunkos drivers. I'm determining whether it's going to be Grist or possibly even Will Owen, but we shouldn't count out Daniel Burkett from Cape Motorsports as well, because he is driving the car that Scott Hargrove had last year. And Latour is, I mean, actually, I take that back. He is driving the car that Hargrove had last year, but the teammates, though, are guys that we can't discount as well, but possibly still in a couple of race wins. Although Blackstock, I don't think, won a single race last year. I think Caleb might win a race if he gets the right circumstances behind him. My big races that I'm looking forward to especially are going to be Lucas Oil Raceway and also at Iowa, because a lot of these guys, except for the rookies, of course, except for the guys that did USF 2000 last year, a lot of these guys have never done ovals before. Wear and Tan, I don't think, has ever run on an oval. I don't think Alessandro Latif has run on an oval. it's going to be interesting to see how they handle running on an oval at Lucas Oil and also at Iowa. I can tell you this much. At Iowa, those cars are really fun to drive, but even more so at Gateway. But we'll see what happens. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, Tan, Latore, and probably, you know, I'm looking at this thing, and one of the guys that I'm actually kind of curious about, because I always like looking further down in the order and seeing what guy's going to strike it. Last year, for me, it was Franzoni in USF 2000, who, honestly, I became a huge fan of just for a lot of the things that I saw then that are starting to show up now consistently. You know, I'm looking at, you just touched on Tristan DeGran. You know, he only ran two races and still collected 50 points. To the other credit, Alessandro Latif and Timothy Bure. One of those three guys, I would really love to see show up and just be, there's always that one guy that you don't see coming. You know, last year we didn't really see Tielitz come at the beginning of USF 2000, and in mid-season he really hit his stride and figured some stuff out, and I believe he ended up winning one of the races before the year was over. But Pro Mazda, same story. I'd be really excited to see one of those guys kind of come up through, somebody that was overlooked at Winterfest. I always like those stories personally for me. We're getting ready for... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you. Keep going.
They're getting ready for testing out at Barber tomorrow. And, you know, you and I both know that not everybody is tested. Not everybody has gotten out there and hit the track. And we fully expect probably inarguably, the biggest grid we've ever seen in the Junior Series right underneath IndyCar. And, I mean, I think they're expecting, was it 20 cars? So, 20-car grid or 22-car grid for Indy Lights in St. Pete, something like that?
Well, we still have no driver listed for Team Moore. Supposedly, Conquest is going to go in. Bilardi might be doing a third car. Who knows? We still have 8-star on the grid as well we have to look at. There's still a lot of variables that have to be solved before we can actually get everything confirmed. Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Well, we know that Max Chilton is that fast for Carlin. And, you know, he came over from F1, you know, racing for Marussia and whatnot. And, you know, I have a hard time him, Brabham, you know, assuming that Brabham is back in a car full-time next year. I more or less expect that. Who am I thinking of here? Spencer Pigot, Jack Harvey, R.C. Anderson. I mean, there's a slew of guys that look really good that, I mean, as stacked as IndyCar is, from head to toe with talent that is honestly incredibly close and some of the closest talent fields that we've been able to see at the top level, this Indy Lights field is equally as talented. In terms of just the sheer how close everything is. I mean, from Chilton to Harvey, you know, to Pigot, I would love to say that Chilton is the heavy favorite because he's got the F1 experience and because he's with the European, you know, junior level Supremo in Carlin Racing. But I got to think that guys like Pigot and Harvey, especially Harvey, my goodness, what he did last year was phenomenal. I think there's something to this class. What do you think?
Honestly, it's going to be extremely competitive, but there's one thing that you should know about Chilton. I don't think he's actually confirmed to run the full season for Carlin because he just signed up today to run for a Nissan in their LMP1 car in the WEC in the World Endurance Championship. So I'm not sure how many races he's going to run, if any, for Carlin's team in the full Indy Lights Championship.
You think maybe he was just trying to get the kinks out and work him up for Ed Jones and company?
He might have been there just to show Colin what they can do if they hire the right driver, honestly.
definitely not Ed Jones right now. How pissed off you got to be if you're Florian Latour that you win the championship, but Jack Harvey jumps you and goes to Indy Lights?
You mean R.C. Anderson?
Was it R.C. Anderson?
Yeah, it was Anderson. Anderson finished second in the title. Latour got the prize to go to Pro Mazda. Honestly, I wouldn't say he's too pissed because at the end of the day, he's got the trophy. So can he really be too mad?
I'm going to check on something because you just got me curious. And I, for the life of me, I think you might be wrong, and I'm going to find out, sir.
R.C. Anderson was second in the USF 2000 championship by like 3 or 4 points. He's going to be going into Indy Lights. Harvey was in Indy Lights last year.
Oh, that's what I keep thinking of, Harvey and Chavez. That's the fight that I kept because Latour and Anderson were close just as well. All of the championships were really tight last year. Sorry, I keep... I don't know why I get Anderson and Harvey confused. I mean...
They're drawing on the same team this year. But, I think the issue with Harvey was that I think he realized that his form came on way too late in the season. He and Chavez had the same amount of wins last year, but ultimately what killed him was he didn't have enough second-place finishes. He had too many third, fourth, and fifths. Although the fact that he didn't have any places below fifth place was fantastic. He did a good job that last year. But
you know,
he just has to be a little bit more consistent.
You know, Harvey last year, obviously not the most seasoned person when it came to ovals, but the road courses being his background, ended up getting a fifth, at Indianapolis in Indy Lights race there. And I actually expect him to be a huge threat for this title. I mean, another year, I mean, we saw what he did at Mid-Ohio last year. It was annihilation. It was absolutely ridiculous. And if he can hit that form, I mean, and you just touched on it. I mean, if he can strike that form and then maybe shore up his oval game and grab a, you know, finish one or two places higher than he did last year at the ovals, man, he's going to be tough to beat. And I fully expect him. He's going to be one of those guys that everybody talks about, Sage Karam, who just is officially at St. Pete with Chip Ganassi for IndyCar, and talking about what a supreme talent guys like Sage Karam are, and people have been talking about Brabham and what a talent he is, even though Brabham isn't quite there yet. Jack Harvey, to me, and Spencer Pigott as well, are right there. I think Anderson needs a little bit more development. He's still, I mean, Anderson is raw, but and I honestly, personally, we had him on the show, and I understand completely what he said. Back then when he was talking about, well, it just makes absolute sense just to go straight into Indy Lights because, you know, you're running another year in Pro, you're running a year in Pro Mazda. That doesn't really help you with the development of Indy Lights, and everybody starts off brand new, and I get that, but man, I don't know. I mean, I think he's going to perform like, you know, top six championship, top eight in a championship if there's a 20-car field out there. But to me, he's really raw compared to Harvey and Pigott and others.
Then again, we don't know what to expect. This is going to be such a new This is going to be such a wild card race weekend coming up in St. Petersburg. I can't wait to see who's going to win and how they're going to perform because we have so many different good storylines with Anderson, with Harvey, with Hargrove, with Pigott. It's going to be insane to see how those guys fight. And I know I'm looking forward to seeing how this championship battle goes down. But, of course, St. Petersburg is where it's all going to start off. Who do I think is going to come out on top? Honestly, I can't say. I really cannot say.
We got about 15 minutes here left on the show, and get ready for something that I'm gonna give Chris a treat and kind of blindside him a little bit here, just because we touched on the Pro Mods, the championship, USF 2000. Obviously, Indy Lights is up in the air until more confirmations and more testing is done tomorrow. And I don't know if there's another test after tomorrow off the top of my head, but if there is, we'll tell you. We've got a lot of our favorite thing to discuss on the weekly show that we have in the Gravel Trap. The last few weeks has been tracks, different tracks that the series go to and tracks that they already visit. And you and I both know that Pro Mazda, USF 2000, Indy Lights, sometimes they go where IndyCar goes, sometimes they go the complete opposite direction of where IndyCar goes. And this year, you know, there's more tracks that they get to touch on, like Iowa with Indy Lights. And, then you got Laguna Seca, Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca, that they actually end the season at 2 weeks after IndyCar's finishing their season at Sonoma. So, all this said, Chris.
Yeah.
Number one, how do you feel about them ending the season, Anderson Promotions, pushing Indy Lights and everybody past the IndyCar deadline with the I don't want to say controversially, but that's not even a word. Controversial. The schedule was short for IndyCar, is short, and a lot of people don't like it. And Anderson Promotion is not letting IndyCar handicap it. So how do we feel about that? How do you feel about them going back to Laguna Seca? And I think they're still going to Sonoma.
No, they're actually not going to Sonoma at all this year. But what I like about them ending at Laguna Seca is this. By not having any more races before the IndyCar finale after the Mid-Ohio race, since it's the last race and after the IndyCar season's done, you might see maybe one or two IndyCar guys just jump to an Indy Lights car just to have some fun with the Indy Lights guys. Of course, they would want to win the race. Would they be eligible for points? Honestly, I don't know. But they might do a situation where the IndyCar guys can't score points and it's only the Indy Lights guys, that can. Although, excuse me, I would like to see I want to see how these cars react to Laguna Seca, because this is the first time Indy Lights, I think, has ever been to Laguna Seca. And a lot of these guys are going to have a hell of a time driving this car around the corkscrew and around and the Andretti hairpin and all that. But that track's going to be a great place to watch the cars go. I can't wait to – I'm honestly glad that they did it. Granted, I'd rather run – if I was going to run a race car anywhere, I'd rather run it at Sonoma than at Laguna Seca. To me, Sonoma is more of a driver's track. There's a lot more variety in the corners. Without the chute, I'd rather run the carousel anyway, or any day of the week. But I like how they're ending the season after IndyCars is done, because of the fact that they can actually get an IndyCar driver or two in there if they wanted to. I'm not sure what your thoughts are, but I'm glad to see it, in my opinion.
How do we feel about there's 16 rounds on the calendar for Indy Lights, which is, it's great, in my opinion. I love the fact that we go back to Milwaukee. I love the fact that Iowa is now on this schedule. The thing that I really am not a fan of, though, is the amount of time between Mid-Ohio and Laguna Seca. I mean, you're correct. They don't go to Sonoma, so I'm wrong there. My bad, folks. And there's such a huge gap, over a month, between the second-to-last event and the last event, where they run rounds 15 and 16 on the season.
Yeah. It does cut down on travel costs by not having a race at Sonoma, because it's only 2 weeks after the Sonoma race that the Laguna Seca race is. That being said, there's also a massive gap after Toronto as well, almost an entire month. In fact, it's only 2 days short of a month. From June 14th to July 12th.
It's just so front heavy, isn't it? I mean, what is that? Five tracks in the first month and a half of the season? Yeah. So, and then you run 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tracks in the final 3.5 months of the season. It kind of goes into what I was saying about the IndyCar schedule on the other show, just talking a little bit about how, IndyCar can spread their stuff out more and make it to where nothing is so front heavy. Granted, you got promoters to handle and stuff like that. And obviously, when the month of May rolls around, it's all about Indianapolis, and that's the only thing that matters.
Of course.
So, I am glad that there's a couple more or another oval on the calendar. I think Iowa, you and I were back by the fact that they didn't go there last year. We're just like, why isn't at least Indy Lights on this? And I don't know, is Pro Mazda also running Iowa?
Yes, Pro Mazda is running at Iowa this year. Pro Mazda is running only two ovals, Iowa and Lucas Oil Raceway. USF 2000 is only running at Lucas Oil Raceway for the ovals this year, which I think, frankly, USF 2000 should run a second oval. I think Iowa might be too big for them. Although I think it would be fantastic if the USF 2000 cars actually ran a second race at Lucas Oil Raceway, but later on in the season, say the same weekend that, you know, maybe some of the USAC guys are running, or maybe the same weekend at the Picard 400.
What about Irwin now?
Do what?
Well, you know, they go out west. What about doing like Irwindale before Laguna Seca?
Interesting decision. Very interesting situation. I'm not sure is Irwindale still open right now? I know they shut down for a little bit.
Yeah, last I heard, promoters were getting everything kind of set up on that. So, I mean, because NASCAR's familiar with it, and you know, I mean, there's, you know, to the other credit though, I mean, you could turn right around and go run. People might butcher me for saying this, bringing up a NASCAR track on an IndyCar show, but how about Martinsville or something like that, for at least to get these guys more seasoned to, because let's be honest, the one thing that a lot of these junior level drivers don't have, and a lot of them are guys, now we're seeing the Mazda Road to Indy really take shape. We've got a good mix of international flavor with, you know, Canadians and Americans and crossover from Europe and obviously South America. These guys that come over from Europe or even the Philippines, like We're in Tan that we just talked about, and
Malaysia.
They don't have a lot of experience on ovals, and if you get some of these kids that can get more oval experience at a younger, you know, at a more inexperienced level like USF 2000, I think that only makes the racing better as they move up the ladder.
Yeah, they need to get more ovals, in my opinion, on the schedule. However, we have to, of course, think about safety here. They need to have safer barriers up. Apparently, Shelby Blackstock took a knock to the head when he wrecked the car over at Gresham Motorsports Park. And I think broke the car, actually. What I would like to see, I'm not sure if Five Flags Speedway in Pensacola has safer barriers, but if they do, that would be a fantastic place to run in the middle of the season somewhere. In fact, that would be a great place to run.
I don't even think Lucas Oil has safer barriers.
I think they actually do. I think they do.
Lots of thinking.
Let me actually check that.
What road courses, you know, just a handful of minutes here left on the show, is there maybe a road course off the calendar that you would like to see? I mean, obviously, Anderson Promotions is kind of extending and branching off of IndyCar just a little bit, not too much, because obviously they want to keep the identity there. But, you know, there's a slew of different road courses that they could go. Everything from, was it Miller Motorsports Park in Utah? To maybe even, I mean, honestly, I'm a little shocked that Sonoma isn't on the calendar and that it's just an IndyCar standalone race. I don't get that. I mean, you have an opportunity there. We saw him last year finish the season in Sonoma. So, I don't know. And it's always been good. I mean, as far as the junior level goes.
Well, honestly, if I would like to see Sonoma on the schedule, but of course travel costs kind of prevent that. I can tell you right now, Lucas Oil does have safer barriers. I'm looking at a photo right now of Star Mazda there from 2012, I think. And I can see the steel tubing. So, yeah, they have definitely have safer barriers there.
You're talking about travel costs, but, I mean, Sears Point is not too far away from Monterey. I mean, you're looking at about a three-hour drive difference.
We're
and
also forgetting hotel costs.
Yeah.
It's going to be hotel costs for 2 weeks on the West Coast. Unless, of course, they schedule a race in between. Like, say, go from Sonoma, go to Phoenix, and then go back to Laguna Seca, you know?
Gosh. And anything IndyCar needs to go back to Phoenix. I'll tell you that right
Agreed.
Now.
Especially,
I would love to see Indy Lights, actually. Indy Light, I don't know if Pro Mazda, obviously. Phoenix is, 1.017 miles?
I think so.
Is it big enough to, I mean, is it small enough, I should say, to pull Pro Mazda? I mean, it's definitely got a unique dynamic, a unique track, and maybe USF 2000 and Pro Mazda both can run on it, but I don't know. I mean, Phoenix is just I miss Phoenix, plain and simple.
I do, too. I do, too. oh, and by the way, so I do want to at least bring something up that I think we all can feel good about. So I'm going to kind of tie this in with the Mazda Road to Indy as well, even though the driver I'm talking about is in the European ladder series. So the team that Wear and Tan drove for in German F3 actually just signed a 15-year-old driver to drive in their Formula 4 this year. You might know the name Mick Schumacher, Michael's son. Yep, he's going to be driving for the same team that Wear and Tan drove for in German F3, but Mick is going to be in Formula 4 next year. So I wanted to kind of bring a little positive note to the end right here. But, yes, I definitely would have to agree with you. Phoenix, that's a must. We have to go to Phoenix.
Wouldn't it be something if Schumacher's son came up and could run just as strong as his dad? Man, that would be phenomenal. We got about, I don't know, 2 minutes left on the show, give or take. Give us a chance to kind of have our final thoughts gearing up for what's sure to be an exciting Mazda Road to Indy season between USF 2000, Pro Mazda Championship, and Indy Light. Very excited that IndyCar is finally back. Gosh, it's been an eternity. So, without further ado, Chris, throw down your final thoughts, sir.
Final thoughts. Well, I'm glad the off season's, you know, gradually, slowly but surely coming to an end. I'm thrilled that we're finally getting cars back on track, and it's only, you know, a few weeks to St. Petersburg. Let's also not forget that this coming weekend, Pro-Am World Challenge will be at COTA, Circuit of the Americas, over in Austin. The races will be shown 1 week taped away at CBS Sports. I'm looking forward to seeing how that turns out, with over, I think, 110 cars actually have now signed up for it. I'm looking forward to seeing how Indy Lights, Pro Mazda, and USF 2000 shape up, considering that in Indy Lights it's going to be so unpredictable, and in USF and in Pro Mazda it's going to be a battle of the old versus the new drivers. Joey, your final thoughts.
First off, I really hope that we get Jack Aitken, Jake Eidson as well. I would love to see them full-time next year, especially Eidson, given what he's been able to pull off. It's a good story. Talese, Franzoni, I mean, everybody is – there's a lot of talent, and each series is stacked. I can't wait to see what Indy Lights does with this new Dallara IL-15. And, I'm ready to get going, man. I want St. Pete to be here already. So, that's my final thought on that. As always, Forza Jules, thinking about you. Keep fighting, Michael. Our thoughts are with both of those drivers. Christopher DeHarty, motorsport.com. Joey Barnes, Tribute Racing. We want to thank you on joining us on this last edition, our latest edition of Climbing the Grid. Thank you, and y'all have a good night.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. churning and burning. They yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flag.